Today, we are talking to Jamie Wilkie, who started her career as a pharmacist and ultimately left that job to pursue a career in digital entrepreneurship. She started a course called The Precision Medicine Hero that ultimately made her over $1 million personally and allowed her to quit her job in pharmacy after she had done that for more than a decade. So today, we're going to talk about finding her voice while not losing her job, dealing with the naysayers that ultimately come about whenever you start pursuing the thing that you really want to do, and how she went about creating out of fun instead of out of the grind, which is something that I personally needed to hear and work on. If you're enjoying this podcast, the thing that you could do for me that will help me out the most is if you could subscribe wherever you're listening to it. And as always, if you have any notes or things that we could improve upon, hit me up on Twitter at TheRaleighWill. And we'd love to hear your feedback on it. We hope you'll enjoy it. So let's get to the episode. What's up, everyone? Welcome back. We got Dr. Jamie Wilkie on the podcast today. We're going to be talking about building a digital empire, doing that through mothering, through leaving your job that you spent so much time to work on. So thanks for taking the time, and I'm excited to dive into it today.
Yeah.
So take me back. Maybe college and going to pharmacy school, and kind of like where you were at emotionally, and like why pharmacy and how it came to be, kind of the path that led you to decide that pharmacy wasn't what you originally anticipated it to be.
Oh yeah. So my career story is really simple. I'm the oldest daughter, so I'm like high achieving female number one in life. I love achievement. I love goals and doing all the things. And so when I was in high school, my dad's always been the CFO of the local hospital. And he one day came home and said, "Jamie, I signed the pharmacist paycheck every single month, and I think you should be a pharmacist when you go to college." And I was like, "Great, sign me up. I'll be 24 when I graduate. I'll have a doctorate level degree, and I'll be making six figures. Like, that's all of my dreams. That checks all of my boxes. That's a successful, wonderful life. I'm a smart girl. I can do it. I don't care about medicine, but I don't care. I can like do what it takes to be a successful female in today's world." And so I just did it. I went to the University of Wyoming, knocked out my degree, 6 years total. I don't even have a bachelor's degree or anything. I just have my doctorate degree, and entered the workforce a week after I turned 24, making like $140,000 a year, feeling like I was on top of the world. I had the best career ever. And it really did serve me well. I'm proud of that, but it's not what I want to do forever.
How did the relationship with your dad change over time? Because obviously you went for it kind of on his counsel, and you're doing it.
Yeah.
When did things start to unravel?
Yeah. I guess after years of doing the same thing and feeling like, oh, this is what an adult is being like Groundhog Day for the rest of my life, especially in a job that's so mundane and you're just doing the same thing over and over and over again, and it doesn't matter what your personality is or your interests or your passions, you're just there to show up and be a robot. And so for a long time it really did work, because I ultimately ended up having four boys while I was working. So I worked part-time, had this sweet income, working like 2 days a week, having kids, like it was everything I wanted. But then everything kind of changed, you know, when COVID hit and the world turned upside down, and it felt like, oh, I'm still stuck going to this stupid job in healthcare and everyone else can like pack up their laptop and come home. My whole neighborhood's just working from home, balancing work and life. And I'm still showing up to this job that I really don't like, because I don't like medicine. I don't take medicine myself. So it kind of was a breaking point in feeling like, okay, that served me well for our finances, balancing work and kids, but like, I got to get out of here. If I stay here forever, I'm going to be that crusty old pharmacist that everyone knows that's grumpy. And like, I can't have that
and,
for my
and
future.
And were these feelings things that you were vocalizing to your husband and your dad, or was it all just internally building up?
No, I was vocalizing it for years and I was really frustrated because I would just spend my whole time, free time, like looking on Indeed.com for the perfect job. Like, what could I do as a pharmacist that's epically amazing? And it was all either like more of the same job working in a retail store or doing all this fancy stuff where you need extra residencies and degrees and certificates that I had no interest in. And so I felt really stuck. Like, I was so proud of this expensive, hard degree, but also like, really stuck. And everyone I told it to was kind of like, well, that's what being an adult is. Like, you just got to do a job that allows you to have the lifestyle you want. And then when you retire, like, then you can have fun. And I always felt like, no, I don't want to do that for the rest of my life. Like, no way. Don't
And did you
cage
feel
me
like
like that.
the people you were taught, do you feel like they were receptive or like just kind of minimizing?
Were skeptical because I'm a very optimistic person, and I think it just came across as like overly optimistic, like, oh yeah, in a perfect world, we'd all be doing what we love and have money growing on trees, but like,
Right.
you got to pay the bills, so it's not fun,
And
but
then
that's reality.
when, and so you're scrolling on Indeed, kind of fantasizing about a different job, but there's all these other requirements. What was the first kind of like, oh, this is something that I can do, like there may be a path here that I should investigate further?
It's so dumb, Raleigh. But it was just creating a LinkedIn account. All this time, I wasn't really on social media other than Instagram and just seeing like my friends' perfect homes and lives. But I didn't see anything professionally that I felt like I could do. But when I created a LinkedIn account like 3 or 4 years ago, suddenly it felt like the world opened and like, oh, there are professionals doing epically cool things. They're just doing whatever they want. I can do that. And it was like a light flipped on and I couldn't go back to unseeing my potential that no one ever told me I could
Do you
have.
remember what it was particularly about link? Like, was it a certain post or just like what was it specifically that you felt like opened the world for you?
Entrepreneurship and seeing that entrepreneurship was an option for me, especially digital entrepreneurship, because all this time my only option to be an entrepreneur is
Yeah.
like open a pharmacy and like, heck no, was I ever going to do that? No way. And so seeing that not only is entrepreneurship available, but digital entrepreneurship that I can just create myself with just a laptop and an internet connection, like, how can you say no to that? There's no
Yeah.
risk and
Was
all
it
upside.
a particular creator, or like was it a Justin Welsh post on like how to be a solopreneur, or like how did you ultimately connect those dots?
No, it's actually the opposite. I saw these other like so I only was friends
Yeah.
with like pharmacists at the beginning and seeing like them doing it and doing it when my
Yeah.
opinion like poorly but still doing it and I was like, "Oh, psh. If these guys could do it, like I gotta get in the game. Clearly, you just make it for yourself." And so it was kind of the opposite, just seeing like how scrappy people were and that they were doing it, it made me feel competitive and like,
Yeah.
well, now I
And
have no excuse.
I think that's
They
such
can
an
do it, I can
important,
do it.
I know in my own story, it was that exact same feeling the first time I went to an escape room and I was like, this is what these guys are making money on, like this of all, like, and then you like meet the owners and you're like, these, I don't know what's politically correct anymore. These idiots are allowed, like these morons are out here making this type of money doing this while I'm like grinding away doing with all these, because you're surrounded by competent people in the job that you have, and so you assume that to be making 10 times more money you're around people that it's done by people that are 10 times more competent, and you find it's not the case at all that they're much more incompetent. And so finding that first thing of seeing someone, I just had a very similar feeling of like, I can't believe that y'all are making this type of money. And it's like, and it's you guys, like, y'all aren't intimidating to me at all.
No one's intimidating, and it's just all self. It's totally up to you, as fast or as slow as you want to go. And so it felt like, well, this is just a fun thing. Like, what? No,
And so
let's just figure it out.
what was the first move? Did you start posting on LinkedIn, or was it was it within the precision medicine realm, or how did that come about?
Oh, no, not at all. So I had no idea what I was even interested in. I'm such a boring professional. Like, I don't even know what my interests are or my passions. I just know I'm good at doing this job, and I've never like thought about what I could do in the world outside of a title and a degree. And so I very quickly saw that like the consistency of posting every day and sharing your voice with the world helps you stand out in some way. So I just made, I'm very good at like non-negotiable things in my day that help me be the kind of person I want to be. So from probably like the first week, I was like, I'm going to post every single day, at least once. I don't know what it'll be, but I'll share my voice with the world and just get in the habit of figuring it out by doing and just see what it's like sharing. And so I just wrote about, oh, my first ones are so awkward and they're so bad, but it helps me become the kind of person I want to be. And just by exploring all the topics, because I saw really quickly my first gut reactions of what I was interested in really weren't something I wanted to hang on to. And I saw after I talked about it two or three times, I was like, no. And kind of like fleshing it out.
You remember what they were? Like what it was about?
Oh yeah. The first one was like just female empowerment in general. The next one was, I tried to start a podcast about like just being content with your life and enjoying the life you have right now. And another one, I wanted to do something cool in pharmacy. And so I started another podcast about like drug updates and in a fun way that very quickly was like nails on a chalkboard, but I had to try it. Like, I just feel in my gut that like, I'm a creative person and I have to create it to see if I like it or not. I can't just think about it. I have to put it out in the world, not for people's approval, but to see if I like
it. How did
that
feel going from a very like academic setting where you're not rewarded for something not working and like feeling like you're getting an F on something is like the worst feeling? How did you overcome that barrier of like that? I think most people in an academic setting have a really hard time getting over, where it's like you don't have a healthy relationship with failure yet coming out from like a professional degree.
I think it's just a part of my personality that I don't really care what people think. And I'm really good at just creating and putting something out there and not being a perfectionistic and over analyzing it. It's something we were talking about right before the podcast started, but like I'm really good at creating something and just putting it out there. I don't over edit. I don't even look at what I've done after I've posted. Yeah. I just do it for good or for bad, but by just getting in the habit of being the kind of person that shares their voice, knowing that like at the beginning you have like no one cares about you, no one's listening to you at all. So it almost felt like I was talking into the void. That felt like it was more an exercise for me than like, oh, gain followers, be famous, because no one knows about you. No one cares. And so it felt fun.
And what was the switch from, where did you start feeling like you were getting like actual traction and that you had kind of tapped into something that could help improve your life?
That came when I finally picked like one subject to talk about repeatedly and like keep banging the same drum. And that came when I saw there's a huge need within pharmacy for precision medicine and someone to champion precision medicine and help our profession to like bring this to their patients. And so I saw a hole in there. I started talking about it and getting a lot of feedback really quickly. And being someone who talked about a subject not a lot of people were talking about and doing it in my own fun way and fun voice and not being a robot professional, attracted attention really quickly. And it was fun. And it kind of poured gas on the fire and gave me more confidence. And like, okay, instead of just talking about everything under the sun, I found something I like talking about. People like hearing.
Yeah.
Let's and do then this.
How did it go from talking about it to monetizing it and turning it into a business?
It started so scrappy. I have no business plan. I don't have any fancy answers, Raleigh, but I was interested in precision medicine and talking about it not only to professionals on LinkedIn, but also on Instagram to like friends and family. And I was sharing like, hey, did you know that like a genetic test can change the medicine you take for the rest of your life? And people just kind of start popping out of the woodworks to DMs to me and saying like, this is amazing. I'm really struggling with mental health. Like, could you help me one-on-one? And so I started working with people one-on-one on the side without even like a formal business in place, just figuring out like, oh, okay, this is cool. I could help people. And so I started building that on the side, charging money for it on the side. And then before I knew it, I had this little practice on the side of my Walgreens job, because I'm still, you know, balancing all of this. And it was like that magic spark of like, oh, I just made money for myself for the first time in my life that didn't come from a W-2 job.
Yeah.
I want more of this. This is amazing.
And when did it go from, I could do this for myself, I can make some money, to, oh, I could actually probably show other people how to do this and make money there as well?
It wasn't something I hadn't even thought of until I was talking with a friend. She had her own business and I was telling her what I was doing. And she just stopped the conversation. She's like, Jamie, do you realize what you've just done? You need to create an online course and teach other people about this. This is amazing. And I was like, no, no one would want to learn this. And she's like, no, seriously, you need to do this. And I did. I had had some messages from people on LinkedIn saying like, tell me what you're doing. And I was like, well, I don't want to coach you one-on-one. I have four kids. I'm already too busy. Like, figure it out yourself. But once she said that, my wheels started spinning, because I was like, you know what? You're right. I have very little time, and smart people leverage their time well and don't just spend it all trading time for money. And so I just winged like the scrappiest course ever into existence in a month.
And then how did that go? Today's episode is brought to you by the Exit Operating System. If you run a business right now and you are thinking about selling it one day and you want to know what you should focus on in order to maximize your exit value, go to exitos.io and sign up now. Peace.
Oh, it was amazing. I had 10 or 11 people sign up, and I told them very bluntly, like, this is going to be scrappy. You're going to be my guinea pigs. I'm going to charge you $500. Just to teach you everything I know. And you tell me like what's awful, I'll change it all. So they had a lot of comfortability knowing that like, okay, this is probably going to be bad, but it's valuable enough that they want it. And so I just turned on Zoom and like recorded myself and sent out all of these separate files. It was so bad, but they liked it and they gave me good feedback. So I re-recorded it again, launched it for $1,000, and then it just kept growing. And I will make a long story short and say that we just crossed the seven-figure marker on this course, that now I've earned $1 million from one course, which started 2.5 years ago, just starting really scrappy without a plan and making sure it was what those people wanted, and then growing and adding.
Was there any point in the journey where you felt like where people kind of just started to give you pushback, like, hey, you shouldn't be doing this, like, hey, don't like rock the boat, you could lose your job? Like, what were some of the like the naysayers saying along any point in the journey?
Oh, all the time. And it was just killing me inside. It was so hard to keep going, because here I am, like, I worked at Walgreens, so I'm kind of like on the lowest of the totem pole in the pharmacy hierarchy. Like, it is not a particularly respectable position. And then to go from there into precision medicine, which is very highly educated, a lot of people were like, who is this girl? Like, what does she think she's doing? She's not an expert. And so people were very kind. And it wasn't like Twitter where people are like giving you death threats, but among the professional community, people, I could feel that people were like wary of what I was doing. Like, she's not that professional. And, what is this? And so it kept me up at night a lot. And I had to, like, I started a meditation practice and like journaling positive thoughts, 'cause it was enough that I was like, should I really do this? Am I enough to do something like this? And it really hurt my soul for probably a year, pushing through as doing something so different.
And was it mostly people like hitting you up on, like, is it professionals sitting up on LinkedIn? Like, hey, watch yourself. Like, don't get too big for your britches, basically.
No, it was more like sideways comments. Like, beware people who to the field, or
the newcomer,
like,
stuff,
kind of stuff like that. Like, very, very, very professional. No one was cranky at all directly, but in, I later came to find out some people I later hired within my company and talked to at these prestigious conferences would have people say to them like, hey, why are you working with her? Like, really? Like, you want to work with her? They're like, yeah, I love what she's doing. So I know, and I could feel those conversations going around, but I don't know. You got to, who cares what other people think in a way when you know you have something that can help people? It's hard, but it almost felt harder to let the people down who I knew I could help than.
Yeah. Did you ever get any pushback from family, your dad? Like, how was your dad through the process of you saying you're going to do an online course instead of being the pharmacist that he raised you to be?
They're like, great, go Jamie, way to create an online course. That was all fine. And then when I said, 2 years ago, I was like, oh, and by the way, I'm going to give up my pharmacy degree, not my degree, my licensure. I'm not even going to be a registered pharmacist and assist anymore. That's when they're like, whoa, do not burn the bridges. Like, you never know what life will bring. Like, you really need a safety net. You really need this job. Like, that would be a very bad decision. And I feel compelled to tell you that, like, whatever you do, do not give up that license because you worked too long and too hard to give it up. And so they're always proud of me and happy for what I did and always a little chagrined on, like, how do you have a successful business? Like, our family doesn't know how to do that. If we did, yeah, we would have done it ourselves. But, like, always have that safety net in case business doesn't work, which, you know, I get their, where they're coming from. But at the same time, it felt a little sad that they weren't, yeah, like, you go, girl. We're 100%
through the, through everything from Walgreens to starting and getting the hate, what do you feel like was like the lowest, most frustrating point for you in that journey personally or with the business?
Probably 6 months in when it became really real that I had earned more than I made at Walgreens that year. So I felt like, okay, this is definitely validated, but I'm also like a complete imposter and I shouldn't be here. Like, this precision medicine world is a very fancy world. And like, what the heck am I doing here? I should probably leave, but now I'm stuck because I have all these people who've paid me money and depend on this course. And like, oh, so I'd even like take voice memos and record it. Like, I want to remember this moment because this is awful and I hate where I've gotten myself, but I feel so stuck. And the only way forward is just to like keep going because I can't let people down, especially when they paid me money. And that was like the low scary point where it actually became real what I was doing and what people had invested.
That's so interesting that it came after you had had like success, like it came after you had had the success that probably before you had that success, you're like, once I get there, then it'll all feel good. It's interesting that it felt lowest. Is it because you felt like you were coming up on the fork on the road? Like, how I can't keep managing both of these parts of my life and I need to let one of them go? Or just the weight of having made that much money and the responsibility that you felt to fulfill for those people? What do you feel like was like the crux of the low point?
Yeah, it was the latter. Like, success, I really believe success is way scarier than failure. Success is real, and it feels like you have to be a new person to keep going and keep growing with it. And that feels really scary and uncomfortable. It's easier to blame that, like, oh, nothing works. I guess I just have to stay comfortable and do this thing I've always been doing. Oh, I don't know when I'm going to get over this feeling that success is scary and it feels really uncomfortable. And I don't think people talk about that enough. Everyone thinks like, once you make X amount of money or achieve this thing, like, you'll be so happy. When really, I feel like the same person. I definitely feel proud of myself, but like, it's yeah, still scary when you hit successful milestones.
Do you feel like there's a part of you that understanding that fear of success almost doesn't want to experience the next level of success based on the new level of fear that you'll run into?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's so funny how our brains work that I still constantly think in the back of my mind, like, you know, what if I just went back to that comfortable job? Like, I can work with my eyes closed. It's just such easy money. And then like I could have nights to just watch Netflix like normal people, and it would just be so easy. I think that all the time, but like, I don't know. Our brains want to keep us comfortable, and it really is a fight to keep growing.
Yeah. Cause that's a pretty like well-known quote of like, you know, it's like your greatest fear isn't that you're inadequate. It's that you're, you know, more powerful beyond measure, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. If you could look back at the habits, maybe some habits that you still have or the habits that you had back then that like, because to have a fear of it means that you're going to try to self-sabotage it as much as possible, right? And so that way you don't experience the thing that you're the most scared of. What do you think were the things that you were doing back then, or maybe things that you do now for the next level of success that were like the self-sabotage behaviors to try to like, to try to keep you from it while you were actively going toward it?
I think just focusing on everything that I was doing wrong and feeling like I was always focusing all of my attention on everything that didn't work, every person that even had a suggestion for me, instead of focusing on what I loved and what I wanted to build. Like 95%+ of my thoughts and time spent working was trying to fix things and keep people happy rather than just like building boldly. It was just worried what people think and trying to fix everything, even though there was never any garbage fires. It's not even totally. Like there was any crazy backlash, but like exactly what you're saying, like feeling the weight of what I was doing was impacting others' lives and like actually changing their life for good or for bad. Not that I had any control over it, but what I was doing was actually changing their life really felt scary. And so in a way I just wanted to minimize and like, okay, never mind. I'll just let you live your life. Maybe I shouldn't talk in case I lead someone in the wrong direction. It's a heavy weight and it's easy to minimize yourself.
Totally. Yeah. I think it's that thought of playing smaller, that like smaller is safer, right? To like stay in the habits of what you're doing. Because with success, you get more of everything. You get more money, you get more hate, you get more adoration, you get more imposter syndrome. And it's when you have nothing and you haven't achieved anything yet, you feel like once I achieve something, then everything goes away. And then once you achieve it, you find that there's a whole nother level that you have to sacrifice to keep going, you know, because, and then you can try to convince yourself to stay mm-hmm. comfortable on the level that you're on. And that works for some period of time. But hearing the story, I think it's that you didn't force the outcome at any step of the way. It seemed like, because I think where a lot of people mess up is they almost put the cart before the horse. Like I've been in plenty of like online courses or whatever. It's like, they don't wait to kind of get the signal from the market of what the market really wants. Like it seems like you were posting and maybe you could talk a little bit about what it felt like feeling, like you kind of said that you noticed this gap in precision medicine and kind of how that came to be. How did you go out to like mm-hmm. feel that gap there amongst posting? Like, what did that look like for you?
Well, I'm just always looking for solutions, because the people who are most effective on social media, the people I learn from the most, who are my mentors, even though they don't know me, are the ones who share what's going on and like solutions and steps, rather than just talking about an issue that's out there. They're helping me solve the problem. And so there was a lot of talk about precision medicine being the future of pharmacy, but nowhere was anyone actually doing anything about it, just talking about how one day it'll like really change. And I was like, well, I'm a pharmacist and I don't know anything about this. So it's like, it's not affecting me now. I guess someone here in the trenches has to do it, because if I can't find anything and it seems really cool and like no one has owned this niche, then I better go talk about it. And so that's kind of how I've sold that, and all the other digital products I've ended up selling is something that I myself am looking for that I don't see a clear solution online. So I go like, well, I am going to figure it out and teach people behind me, or just find what's out there and kind of curate.
The longer I've been an entrepreneur, at the very beginning of entrepreneurship for me, I felt like all the discussions around beliefs were like a waste of time. skip belief stuff. Like, I want to get to like tactics and like, mm-hmm. you know, how to actually do the thing. Mm-hmm. What do you feel like are either some beliefs that you used to have that you no longer have, or that you have now that you used to not have? Like, how have your beliefs changed from pharmacist Jamie working at Walgreens frustrated to entrepreneur Jamie with the world as her oyster?
I used to believe that I needed to find the right person who could give me the perfect job that would make me happy. And if I could just find the right job, that would be what I needed. And now I believe that I can just create whatever future I want. And it's just figuring out in what way I'm going to implement it in my life. So it's really very fun to know that you have it in your control. And before I felt like, well, it's out of my control. Like, the stars just aren't aligning for me in my unique situation. And now I think you can largely make whatever you want in your life. And if the confidence just to do it. And I think that's why I was able to grow so quickly at the beginning and to like get what I want. Cause once I decide I want something, it's not a wish and a prayer. I just expect that it's going to happen and I work like it's going to happen and it usually happens. So I don't know if that's something you can teach someone or just convey that like, just expect it and build the thing and don't get all wishy-washy and wonder if it's going to work. Just do it. The hard part is hanging on when your emotions are like, what are you doing? This is really awkward. But just do the thing.
Back in pharmacy land, did you have any fear of like losing your job as you started posting, or like as you kind of started throughout the process? Did you get the lobster pool back? Like, hey, you're trying to get out of this can. Like, you should be staying here because like we're a crew. Did that happen?
Oh, man. Yeah. All my coworkers were like making fun of me. They're like, if you want more money, just work overtime. Like, that's the way to make more money. You get time and a half, like cash in on that thing. But as for the company, I knew I was quitting. I knew I couldn't stay there long term, but you can't just quit your job unless you're, you know, absolutely financially independent. So I kept on there and I almost hoped I would have some kind of edgy posts regularly. And I kind of hoped Walgreens would see it and fire me so I could have a dramatic exit. But I don't think a big company like that cares what their little underlings say. And so no one ever cared. And if anything, I would just get DMs from people within the company like, you go, girl, I love this. But when I quit, I just ended up calling them on the phone and saying, by the way, it was a good 10 years, but I'm done. And it was nothing dramatic. Like, I kind of hoped it would be because I pushed it, but.
Yeah, because I assume, I know when I was leaving the law, like at least in a law firm setting, like it is very looked down upon if you have any outside business interest or if you're looking to do anything else. Like the expectation, I assume pharmacy is the same way. Like the expectation is you are going to be a lawyer for the rest of your life and you're only doing it because you really enjoy it. And so I made the mistake of confiding in some of my associates and some of my senior associates that were in the practice groups that I was in, like confiding in them that I wasn't happy. And so it kind of got around. I mean, I was only a lawyer for 9 months, but it got around like within 5 or 6 months that like, yo, Raleigh is not going to stay here. And then once the partners knew that I was like trying to find a way out, I think that's when they really tried to turn the screws. Like they tried to smoke me out. Like they basically were like giving me the worst projects and like giving me like the worst stuff just so I like would quit. So I definitely didn't play it the right way, but I think the way that you, cause when did you kind of monetize precision medicine relative to quitting Walgreens? What was the timeline on that? Did you like start making money while you were still at Walgreens?
Yeah, it took 9 months before I could quit. So it wasn't like, oh, I made $1. Now I'm quitting my job. It was 9 months and I was slowly easing off and like having less and less work. And just like you, like the whole district knew that I was doing this side thing. And they're like, okay, some people thought it was dumb. Some people thought it was cool. Some people wished they could do it. Everyone knew, but because it's such a big company, I didn't worry that it would like lose my job, which is part of the niceness of an anonymity in a behemoth company. And so I don't know, it was fun, but it definitely took time to make sure this was a real thing, not a risk that would like put my family in danger or, you know, cause I'm not a risky person and I like to do things well for the long run rather than like, oh, this is an idea. Yeah. I'm just quitting my job and jumping off the deep end and burning all relationships with people. I could probably get a job back easy if I really wanted it, but seeing that something worked, getting the confidence, and then just tasting what it's like to earn money while you sleep and earning more money with less work is something I just can't.
How was your husband's support throughout it? Like, was he just down for whatever you do you, or like, hey, two income to one income, are we sure? Like, was how did that dynamic play into it?
Oh, he's so awesome. He's so supportive from the beginning. And the more I've gotten into this, the more he's almost been like, how did you even last in pharmacy? Like, this is so not you to show up to a job and like do this kind of rote work. And in fact, he has called me unemployable recently. He's like, you can never go work for someone again. I'm like, I know. So he's been really supportive. And I think the dynamic of our relationship that I came out swinging when I was 24 and I supported our family and worked full time while he got his master's degree. And I carried the family for a long time with the higher income. And now he has a significantly higher income that it's just been a trade. And we're like, he's like,
yeah,
it's fine. Go do you. We're in a good, and that's a nice place about being in a really good place financially, that it wasn't like, oh my gosh, can we pay the mortgage next month? This is really tight, that we are savers and had a really good financial stability. So we could both not work for a long time and it's no big deal. So there was a lot of planning that went into it to get us to be so laissez-faire.
So if you were to try to distill down to like what a playbook looks like. So assume that I'm working at a job that I don't like and I want to quit. Because I feel like our paths are so different. And I feel like yours is so much more sustainable and so much more replicable than the way that I did it, which I would basically recommend to no one, because it was like, it's like,
you're like an adventure
crazy
story.
Mine is crazy. And it is not, it was like, I was so confident in myself. It's crazy. Like, but I feel like yours is so much more of a sustainable and replicable path, not for precision medicine in general, but just hearing the story, because I don't know that I've ever heard it from A to Z the way that we're talking about right now. So walk me through kind of step 1 through 7 on like how you would go about, and I like the term that you use in terms of like digital entrepreneurship. I think the mistake that I made when I was in your position, not enjoying my job, is I made the mistake. I put this insane amount of pressure on myself that like being an entrepreneur was a higher calling and I needed to put up or shut up. And like, now's the time, burn the boats, go all in, like, don't be a bitch. Like I had all of this pressure on myself that I just made this shit up from like, on like what it needed to look like. I like glorified the entrepreneurial path and I wanted to create this crazy adventure for myself. So I did, but there's a much easier, like a much gentler path that exists that you took. So how would you kind of talk someone through starting and finding that first toehold of momentum?
Yeah, we are total opposites. You are right. And I think the beginning framing of at least how I approach life and creating things is to think of it as like, this is just a creative pursuit and I'm just genuinely doing it for fun and kind of as a public scientific experiment to see what works and to learn like how to leverage the internet with all these eyeballs on it. And when I see other people making money, like I want to learn how, but like, I don't have to, I don't need a certain amount of money. So for me, it's just all fun and creative and like as slow or fast as I want to go. And I think that's given me a lot of flexibility that usually entrepreneurship is like you said, like stake your claim, burn the boats. If you haven't earned X amount of money in this amount of time, like you're doing something wrong. It's just really almost been artistic for me that it's just fun expression and finding my voice. So I would start with step one being just have fun and like consider this as an interesting pursuit rather than like what will earn me the fastest money in the shortest amount of time, because I'm very much a minimalist and I don't like things. I don't like complicated life. And so digital creation for me is really fun because there's like no risk, really no costs, and all upwards rewards. So first is just have fun with it. Second, I would consider a digital medium because that way you don't have huge investments or hires or people that you even have to start with that weight of, that it's just fun and free. Three, I don't know what number we're on. C3, just start sharing your voice every day and find something you like talking about over and over again that's genuinely fun. Not like you're a professional trying to create a business. Like you can feel that when people are talking. Just talk as your human self in subjects you're interested in. And then as you're talking about it and seeing what other people are saying about that subject, when there's holes and you see like, there's this huge problem. Why has no one solved that? Try solving a little problem for someone or for a group and just see how it goes. And then once you've solved it or attempted to solve it, take notes and like, what worked? What didn't? How could you monetize that? How could you make that work for you? And being really curious and just having fun and talking with the customer a lot so they have a good experience and then monetize it and scale. Those are way too short of a summary, but I don't know. I feel like people don't give creation and curiosity a real chance. We all just want like to get to the finish line as fast as possible and aren't willing to be vulnerable, be a beginner, be awkward, be weird. And that's where you find your voice. And you also attract an audience to you as a human because people like a story more than what it is you're saying. They like your story and they like watching your arc and what you're going through. And so sharing that, or most people won't, they just want this like beautiful, successful business they can put up and people pay them money, but it's the story. And I don't know, like having a real feel for what's out there that at least in my experience is magic.
For me, it took me before I had done anything. If you had said like, focus on what's fun, I would have said, what's fun is making money. Like that's it. And it's taken me 8 years to allow myself to do something. Like for me, fun almost feels guilty. Like I feel guilty if I'm having fun. I'm like, shit, I'm having fun. Like I should be working right now. And I think that's from school. That's probably a lot from how I grew up. And even still, it's a practice for me to try to come at it from a more creative way, because I think what it requires, I think that those emotions and those kind of core impulses tend to be something that like, that the feminine can grasp onto and tap into so much easier than a masculine energy can. And so like, I've seen my wife do it for years and make a lot of money and like have a lot of joy. And while she's in an unhealthier version of me, when she was having fun doing it, it was like, it felt like something was wrong. I'm like, yo, like you should not be having, like, this is work. Like, this is not about fun. You should not be, if you're having fun, you're doing it wrong. And it's taken a lot of time and a lot of work on myself to be able to even allow myself to have fun in the creative process. And it's an even harder thing to have fun be like the North Star, but I think it's so much, it's such a better way to do it. And so I'm only saying it because someone can hear this and be like, oh, well, that's like Jamie's way. But Raleigh's way is more like me, where like I like want to be miserable. And I'm saying, don't do it like how I did. Save yourself a decade of like forcing yourself to work. And really, the way that I got it was because when I was growing up, every single weekend, we would go to a farm and we would, and I would, me and my brothers would work with my dad. It would always be about like, we would take pride that we weren't like men of leisure is what my dad would say. Like that we're like workers, you know what I mean? And we're here to work. And it's like by the sweat of thy brow yeah. type stuff. Like you're it's supposed to be miserable. And when you create, when the thing that you, when that's like the core emotion. So like the business that I built, which was an escape room and a tramp, like I was miserable in that business, even though it was making good money. And that's a little like probably a little bit more woo woo than what people normally talk about. Like the emotion that you create out of, you tend to create the thing that keeps that emotion around. And so I created that business out of just work. And it created an ethos of that business of work. And now being out of that business, trying to like, and even for me still, like it's still like, it's, it feels very uncomfortable to be having fun because I feel guilty. I'm like, I must be doing it wrong. And so it's like, I think that's such a better way to do it. And I do think for me doing things with my wife, where she's so much more naturally tapped into that and just like trusting her intuition on it. Cause it does, it takes a lot of, it feels scary when you're coming from the place of work and work should be hard and work should be miserable, then going to the fun side feels like you're wasting time, mm-hmm. but it's such a better way to operate.
Yeah. And it just feels more sustainable for the long run. Cause whatever you do can compound significantly over time. And if you enjoy it, it's way easier and more fun to compound than forcing something and then ultimately burning out, because you can certainly burn out in entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
Just as well as working yeah. for a boss.
Well, I think we hit on everything that I wanted to hit on. Any last words of advice for those looking to kind of branch out and do something different?
I think the advice I'll give is the one that always bugged me that I would hear people say is that like you can look at people a few steps ahead in what they're doing, but don't try to copy them. You ultimately got to do your own thing, and what your playbook is will likely be different than what you see out there. So get inspiration from people a few steps ahead doing things that are cool, but from the beginning, truly create something that is feels good to you and is who you are, rather than trying to copy anyone or take too much advice, because I think the thing I've learned most mm-hmm. is just to follow your gut and do that thing that you want someone to tell you to do that you already know what yeah. to do.
Yeah.
To do that thing that like you want to read the book to have this fancy person tell you that's yeah, the thing you should do.
I call it Cinderella syndrome, where like you just want Prince Charming to come and like put the slipper on you and say like you're chosen for this thing, like and you want this external validation that you're on the right path. And unfortunately, you only get that yep. when you're in the wrong path and you have bosses that tell you that. And so that's the emotion that you yep. have to sacrifice in order to do your own thing, is you have to give that to yourself, which can be hard sometimes. So Jamie, where's the best place for people to follow you and get more of your insights?
On LinkedIn, obviously, Jamie Wilkie. And if you like conversations like this, then you should totally join Primo, because we got more coming.
Thanks so much. We will see you on the next one. Peace.